Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi there, you are listening to the Third Coast Pocket Conference, where your next great story begins. On this show, we share sessions from past Third Coast conferences featuring the world's top radio makers and podcasters. I'm your host, Dennis Funk. Inspired by a Lego time machine built by his son, Danish independent producer Rekha Houd created a tool to help producers take advantage of the vast space radio offers. She called it the Amazing Radio Verticillometer. And don't worry, I have no idea what that word means either. But in this conference session from 2014, Rekha demonstrates how she uses this imaginary machine to think about a story as an exercise in time travel, which can add depth, perspective, and pleasure to your work. I should mention that this session is probably for more dedicated listeners, as you might want to have the illustration of Rekha's verticillometer on hand and transcripts for the excerpts of non-English works that she plays. But don't worry, just follow the link in the podcast description or search this session's name on thirdcoastfestival.org and you'll be able to download all of those materials from there. Okay, I'll give you a minute to go and get yourself sorted now. Okay, all set? You could have probably just pressed pause. All right, let's listen.
So thank you for coming. So I'm going to talk about this machine today. A year ago or so, I was preparing a workshop. I was going to Finland to teach radio feature making and creative sort of storytelling with sound, and I was going to teach a group of news reporters and people that work on daily programs, culture, and I was sort of in my kitchen sort of making notes when my son came in, and he likes to build things and sort of with Lego, and he likes to make time machines, and him and his brother, they're always sort of talking about these things and where they'll go. And so I was there, and he came to me and he said, you know, I've decided, he was asking me what I was doing, and he said, you know, I think I've decided when I grow up, I don't want to be a time machine inventor anyway. I want to do what you do. And I didn't think that he knew what I do, because he's sort of in his own world a lot of the time. But he said, so what do I do? And he said, yeah, you record things and you tell stories. And I was like, I was trying to look neutral, but I was very happy, you know, that he sort of knew and that he could imagine doing this, even though in many ways I wouldn't recommend it either, because it's not a job that makes you rich, for instance. But when he said this thing with the time machine and the stories and the radio, it sort of came together. Sort of this came together in my head like some kind of snap. Because it just occurred to me that a good story is like a time machine, you know. It can take us places and it can make us travel, you know, into the minds of people, into worlds that we've never seen, and we can see it with sound and words and all these magnificent things that we can do with radio. So, I erased the workshop I was planning, and I just drew this, which is sort of pretty much unchanged. I have some things I'd like to add later. I also dream of having it built, but time machine builders are hard to find. So I named it the Radio Verticalizator, and I'm going to try to demonstrate it today. So when I was preparing this workshop, I was feeling frustrated, and I had been for a while. Like every time I prepare a workshop, it was like I felt like I was lacking some kind of language to talk about this radio feature making, which lends so many techniques from music and from literature and from poetry and photography and film. And I felt like a lot of the teaching material that I had received when I was learning, and a lot of sort of the terminology and sort of, it's sort of more linked to journalism, you know. If the radio feature lives in a house, you know, I always sort of had to enter through the door of journalism, and I had to sort of say it's not about this, you know, and unlearn almost. I wanted people sometimes to unlearn what they knew from maybe their daily jobs in. But you know, radio, it has like, if we don't think about journalism or genres, it has this kind of potential, you know, that we can work radiophonically with storytelling and work with layers and work with this space that radio has. And radio does this so well. So, I was going to Finland to teach, and I just sort of really wanted to find a way to that these journalists would sort of forget everything they knew and sort of wash, you know, the what's it called? This thing on the wall, you know, wash it, start on a fresh, you know, and forget everything they knew about journalism and just sort of think about radio. What can radio do? And maybe sort of try to find their voice or their expression, enter this house from a different direction. So, and that's what this is about, this machine, more or less. So it's like in a radio story, you know, time passes and we can't really do anything about that. We can't stop time. And that's wonderful about radio too, because it has this nowness. It's here and then it's gone. But radio can also create like an illusion of space. And this space can be many things. It can be a physical space, a landscape that we paint with words and sounds, but it can also be emotional spaces or dream spaces or crazy spaces or absurd spaces and temporal spaces, like time spaces, time stretched or faster or whatever. And sort of you can reach some layers, I think, of human sort of experience that are sort of some complex kind of emotional, how we perceive the world. The radio can sometimes, I think, you know, really illustrate that or be that. So there's also the space of a pause, you know, and all these sort of less tangible senses we have of speciality as humans. And we can blend these spaces together as well, and sort of something third comes out of it. We can't escape time and the timeline, but I think that we can often forget to use this vertical sort of timeline or axis in a story, and we can forget to use this space that radio offers, and that's a shame, I think. And we can create layers, you know, with subtext and of sound and contrasts and pictures and metaphors and sounds that transform into something else, and we can use double exposure, triple exposure, two things happening at the same time, and a third sort of layer is created out of that. Lots of techniques from literature there too, and photography and so on. So, yeah, and sometimes there's just a space that one voice creates as well, you know, like I was listening to it last week, this Dylan Thomas's play from the 50s, Under Milkwood. It's like, it's just one voice, but it really creates a huge space. So there's a lot of ways to do this, and I think this machine is not about doing it in one way, but it's for us when we start sort of to produce that we look at it and say, how can I use this space for this story, or even for each part, a little part of the story? So it's like an idea, it's like a visualization of an idea or an approach or an entrance into this house. It's work in progress, and I think it doesn't really hold water all the way. You know, there are some parts of it that I haven't thought about enough. It was actually nice to be in this session before about sound design, because there was people there that could speak about sound in a way that I can't, you know, but it's sort of related to this. So, and I think even though I've made this for radio feature making, I think it can be used in many genres. It's not just for the crafted radio, but also in live interviews or whatever, you know, just is, can I create space, you know, here? So I'm going to go over the time machine and play a few examples, and then you can ask questions later. And I want to play an example from a story I made like last year. It's a story that starts in Denmark and it continues to Greenland. It's called The Woman on the Ice. You should look at the first page. And I think before you listen, it's just the beginning of the piece now, and maybe try to imagine like a black space before you hear it. I just want to add something I forgot to say. When I started in radio, 16 years ago, I found this old book that I read, and it was about the sort of early fascination of radio, how it was a black space, like an ether, and everything could happen in this black space. And it was like, it really impressed me, this text, because it's, I think this is what it is for me. And every time I start a story, I try to imagine this black space, and you can really fill it. You know, if you have the black empty space, you can, every time, you know, you stand in front of it and say, no, what am I going to fill it with, you know? What's with this story, you know, what should be the first sound and the second sound, and with what energy should it enter this black space? And you can have sounds that have a color or words that have a color, and you can really sort of, you can approach it in different ways, like as if you're painting or writing or even weaving or building or whatever. I like to start a program sort of visualizing this black space, and if you just sort of visualize a black space now, so here's the first example.
Det er her, historien starter og slutter. På isen. En ung kvinde, der går afsted. Det er næsten fuldmåne. En aprilnat i 1933 på Grønlands østkyst. Kvinden er på vej ud mod fjordmundingen. Hun har en skistav i den ene hånd. Hendes fodspor i den nyfaldne sne slanger sig afsted. Og så stopper fodsporene ved iskanten. Skistaven ligger på isen. Kvinden er væk. Jeg har hørt en historie, sagde min mor for nogle år siden. Hun havde hørt den i Østgrønland, hvor hun arbejder. Der hører hun mange historier og fortæller mig lige så mange. Men denne her historie blev ved med at dukke op. Historien, hun fortalte, er kort. En ung dansk kvinde rejste i 1932 som den første danske sygeplejerske til den tyndt befolkede grønlandske østkyst. Hun uddannede sig som sygeplejerske med det formål alene at komme til Grønland. Men hun nåede ikke engang at være der i et år. Så en nat gik hun ud på isen. Hun fortsatte ud mod havet til iskanten. Og her slutter historien. Sammen med fodsporene. Når jeg lukker øjnene, kan jeg se fodsporene for mig. Skikkelsen på isen under månen. Jeg kan høre sneens knitren og det lille hak, hver gang skistaven rammer isen. Når jeg lukker øjnene, forestiller jeg mig, at det er mig, der går. Men jeg ved ikke, hvem jeg er og hvorfor jeg går. På min højre hånd ser jeg Sømandsfjeldet. På min venstre troner fjeldet Polheim med sine syle spidse tinde. Det er koldt, men jeg fryser ikke. Jeg følger fodsporene.
So we had like black space a moment ago, and now it's been inhabited with the ice and the moon and the mountains and this woman walking like on the ice in the middle of the night 80 years ago, we learn, and sort of me walking there too in a way, and I was you know, I needed to create the mind, in the mind of the listener, I needed to create this this space of Greenland somehow, and also set the tone of the program. And in this piece, I work a lot with this double exposure, sort of, because she travels to Greenland and I travel, and our travel somehow, there's some connection that happens during this trip. And you know, using these layers, it's a nice way also to convey information, maybe in a more evocative way sometimes, or to create suspense and move the story forward. So, but anyway, I should present this now. So we have the black space, okay, that's where we begin, and then we fetch the verticalizator. And it's just a very normal time machine, you can see, but I've changed the knobs here, so it's instead of saying, you know, Back to the Future and to the Stone Age and stuff, it's the basic ingredients of radio. And the D, it means distance and middle and closeness, and it's the same parameter on all these knobs. So it's distance and closeness in many different ways, but I'll get to that. But I think distance and closeness are sort of quite good parameters to work with in radio, because I want to, when I record, when I go and record a story or I write or I use sound or whatever, I think it's nice to sort of have a dynamic material, and we can get that by altering these knobs during the process of recording and writing and editing. So the whole idea is to make us more conscious as radio makers before we go recording, you know, what kind of space of reality am I entering? What am I trying to capture? What sounds do I want to bring home with me? What's my focus? Who am I in the story down here? What's my aim, point of view? How would I like it to sound? And sort of what am I after? And I think I've often asked myself this question much too late, and I've sort of, it's really sort of learning by doing, and lots of missed opportunities and lots of mistakes, and sort of bringing home a material that was sort of flat and didn't really offer, it didn't have the thing that I was after, this first idea I had, which was so sort of full of details, and I came home and the material was sort of undynamic. So we want to create pictures in the mind of the listener, and often when we make a feature, this genre is sort of defined as a corner of reality perceived through an author's temper or something, I think that's the words. And you know, we need to breathe some soul into radio, I think, and we can do that by turning these knobs a little, also sometimes leaving our comfort zones. So I think it's very important that we've sort of tell stories where all the ingredients are connected to the story, where they're not sort of on top of them like a wet blanket. So the first knob is the position of the author, and it's a very important knob, I think, because this is a question we should ask ourselves before we embark on a story. And I've really forgotten to ask myself this many times, you know. Sometimes it was uncomfortable to ask myself this question. I mean, maybe this is especially when we work on more creative pieces or documentary pieces where we come and sort of interfere with reality for a longer time, and we take the stories of people that have something at stake. And it's very important, I think, that we ask ourselves this question. You know, will you be confronting, critical? Then you should put it over here. You need the distance to do that. You know, or is it like a totally personal thing? Are you the subject? Where are you on this scale? And this might change a lot during the piece, but it's good to keep asking yourself these questions, you know. So I have a fondness for authors in radio features that are a little neurotic or a little sort of sort of full of human flaws, if they're like a visual or audible part of the story. But it's also wonderful with authors that put their print on the story through the editing or the way they use sound and so on, through interviewing. And but I want to play an example from that I heard in Berlin 2 weeks ago. There was this yearly competition, Pre-Europa, and it's an American young radio maker. She lives in Stockholm, and she was there with a piece called It's Private. So it's her living in Stockholm interviewing another expat in Stockholm, and she's really sort of looking for a family. Actually, she's looking for a mother, a surrogate mother. And she interviews her friend's mum, and she really yearns for some kind of closeness. And the interviewee, the mother, sort of refuses this, and kind of play a...
Your husband is Swedish.
Yes.
And you met in Lesotho.
Yes.
How did you meet?
Well, we worked in the same department. I was working as a volunteer and he was working on a UN project.
And tell me the story.
No. No, I don't do personal stories about my relations.
Don't trust her, she's lying. Can I?
Sure. Christine would probably welcome...
I'm having a break being interrogated. She's not getting very far with me because you know I don't talk about the past and I don't get sentimental about things.
Yeah, that's true.
Christine, how would you feel if I asked Søren how you met? To tell the story about when he first saw you.
I don't think he would tell you.
Can I ask?
Brett wanted to know if she asked you about the story of how we first met, would you tell her? And I said, I don't think so. No.
I shouldn't do that. No.
So I think she hadn't expected this reaction, but very soon she asked herself, I know from talking to her, her name is Brett Ascarelli, by the way, that she sort of had to adjust this knob, and she was very clear about her position towards this woman, you know. And it sort of turned into a game which became the engine and the charm of this story. I think if she hadn't sort of confronted herself with this question and used... Sometimes it's a good idea to use things that go wrong in the story. It's usually what... You just use it for the story. It's where the energy is. So in the next clip from the same story, she has sort of manufactured her fantasy. She's recorded her fantasy about how they met at home when she wakes up in the morning. She records it and then she goes to see this woman and plays it to her. And again, I think this is only something she can do because she's clear about her position as an author and she's been clear about it towards the interviewee, the person that she's portraying. And this clearness, I think, is really important sometimes for this space of trust that you need to work with these kind of stories.
All right, ready?
Yeah.
This is when you meet Søren.
Okay. Did we talk about that?
Well, not really.
So I don't think we talked very much about that.
She's new the University of Lesotho. It's warm there, really warm, even though it's September.
No, Lesotho is a mountain kingdom. It's warm about 3 months of the year.
One of the people she meets is this guy with a funny accent. There's something about him. Maybe it's the weird things that he talks about. He seems to know all sorts of facts. It's like a little encyclopedia in his head. She's already has a family back home.
he invites her over. And he shows her this carving that he bought in Kenya. It's a carving of a rhino, a pregnant rhino. He offers to make her dinner.
That's highly unlikely.
But she'd better be going. Over the next few weeks, though, she thinks about him. And the next time he invites her over to listen to him play the drums, she stays for dinner. And then she stays for breakfast. And then there are many breakfasts.
This is your little fantasy.
Just a guess.
Nope. But never mind, we want to fantasize.
Is there any part of it that rung true?
You make it sound sort of nice and romantic, etc. I'm not a romantic, and neither is Soren, so I just don't think it doesn't. You could be talking about somebody else entirely.
You weren't even a romantic back then?
No. I'm just not. So you're trying to there make me into something I'm not.
Yeah, so Brad she's an author with an unusual mission. She's really looking for family or even her mother, and because she's clear about it, they can sort of embark on this game. Or like it's almost like a duel, and the suspense is sort of when will she refuse her, you know? And they don't. She doesn't. So she opens up a little, and it's beautiful. But sometimes we don't know, you know, what our position is until we're very far into the story, or we thought something and it changes, and this confusion is good, I think, as well. But just as long as we keep asking ourselves, you know, this question. And the next excerpt I'm going to play is it's a piece by a Greenlandic radio producer. Her name is Henriette Rasmussen. And I was teaching a course for Greenlandic and Icelandic radio makers and in radio feature making, and she wanted to produce a piece about Greenlandic men. She said there's so many unhappy Greenlandic men, and there's a lot of families that break up, and there's a lot of problems, drinking and suicide, a lot of suicides, and young men, old men that have a hard time sort of finding their place in society. And she'd found this little circle of men that met once a week in sort of a closed circle and told each other everything, sort of like a completely safe space for telling everything. So she wanted to make a program about these men and this circle, but of course they never let her into the circle. And when she came to Denmark at the end of this course, and her and I was coaching her, and we sat down to sort of finalize this piece, and we just realized that we hadn't asked ourselves this question, you know, what's your position in this story? Why are you making it? Just to add something as well is that sometimes it's also good that we ask ourselves, like, is there anything in this story that I'm afraid of? Or these questions too, I think, can be relevant for certain kinds of stories, you know. Maybe we sometimes use subjects that are some kind of therapeutic, you know, process that we're going through. And so we had this conversation, and she said, well, everybody close to me are suffering. All the men close to me are suffering. And while we had this conversation, the phone rang, and it was a close relative, and he was, like, really unhappy. His wife had thrown him out, as far as I remember, and he was in the street, and he was drunk, and she put down the phone, and she was so upset and unhappy. And we talked a bit, and he was like, but this feeling you have now, this is something we can, you know, this is an energy we can use to tell this story, because the material lacked dynamics and it lacked direction because we hadn't thought about this. And then she just went upstairs, sat there on her own and talked, and we used some parts of these things that she talked about in the story and developed it later. And so here's a clip from that. I think it's number 2, isn't it, in the script? Sorry, I just need to set it up better. She's been walking the streets of Nuuk. Greenland, and she's been sort of seeing men that she knows and old schoolmates sitting on a bench drunk and so on, and she comes home. That's where we are.
Valmuit nasunguit sikaartuarpsi visuumi sungaartut aapparuttut itideriallarma sunaana nipersua kiisama killunga ingalaamukarpunga paasideriallaringa arfersuinuna nippaat assaanippi Isumariorpunga arnaviaq angutiviarlu paangikkuni sammingikkuni nipiriortoruyoruyussuusu anibunga sidataartuinnaavu puyorpo kisiannillernani takusinnaangilakkali Tamallattu saasinnaavakkani perujussui tupinnaktu. Arfirit imanut tammakkipput pujohlu nipäänni kivittisok aamma kivivok. Sekinak kissakpok sidannakli nillataaktarilluni. Kangerlunni paarnanik ulikkaarpo aaraanni uqaruqatingeqqikkusukkaluarakku piumajunnaarporli kisianni jukku uqaruqatingaara jukku aamma angutit uqaruqatingiittarfiannut ilaavo 50 missaanni ukioqarpo kajortuni iseqarpo uikumalu saniteraa
uanamminerlua арнани сисамани аппақарникууг кигуллунулиаривара
Greenlandic words are so long. It's different pace than American radio, isn't it? So this piece just came together when we realized, you know, that her position as a storyteller should be over here and she could sort of be the engine. She became a character in the story. And it was her point of view that took us on this trip. She moves a lot between inner and out of space in this story too, sort of inside and outside, and these layers, there are more and more of them as the story goes ahead, you know. And I think the charm of that is, like, after this scene, she's talked about these whales, and she goes out on the street, and even though this scene is finished, for me it sort of continues as a sort of invisible layer in the narrative, and that's part of using this space as well, that we have more and more layers inside our head when we listen, you know, subtext or whatever. She's really working on that axis, I think. I'm not sure she could have made this story in any other medium than radio either. And I like stories that have that quality when they're made for radio. Now the next knob is microphone distance out there, and I put it there because it applies to all the other knobs. So when you turn one of these knobs, you should also consider microphone distance, and I'll just talk shortly about it. So we have like extreme close-up, which is here, 2 inches, and 6 inches is close-up, and medium close-up is here, 15 and 20 inches, and then we have like wide shot, long shot, so that is basic distances we can use when we use a microphone. And of course, if we create a picture and sound, we can use it like with a background and something happening up here and on the sides and in the foreground and so on. And this is something we should consider always. But also when we, like, we can cast characters in a story using different distances of microphones. So our protagonist can be closer. We know this person is more important, or that we should get closer to this person, while maybe the characters on the side or even the antagonist can be like out here. This distance, medium close-up, it's often used for interviewing politicians, and you sort of, you hear this space, you hear the room, whereas extreme close-up is like being inside somebody's head, you know, it's like being in this dream space or inner space. So we can use it to cast, and we can use it to build scenographies, and I think that's that. And I just want to add that today I'm just going to talk about interviewing and narration and the position of the author, because I don't have time for all of it, and also because I think these are where the story usually gets flat. You know, the scenes, the verite, the situations that we record that are happening here, sounds, the music, are sort of close by nature. They create space by nature, not close by nature. They create this space, and we should just use it more. Another reason why I'm not talking about that is that I haven't got the language for it, so I would want to learn more about it. But I think there are many details one could go into regarding that. But interviewing, narration, and the position of the narrator are some of the ingredients that we use more in traditional storytelling and journalism. And I think we have sometimes the tendency to sort of develop habits that are very safe and not sort of to be creative about how we use these three things, and it's often the use of this that can make a story flat, I think.
Hello, just poking in to let you know we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be right back with the rest of this session.
You're listening to Chicago's Progressive
Radio Adventures.
This American Life, am I right?
The show about all the unseen.
Are you tired of endlessly searching for good radio stories, or maybe feeling overwhelmed by the amount of podcasts filling up your feed?
This is Radio Lab. I'm Jad Abumrad.
Well, worry no more, because Third Coast has you covered. I'm Gwen Maxey, host of Third Coast's podcast, Resound. Resound is a themed, hour-long mix of the best in radio and podcasting from the past and present. We've been carefully curating nothing but the best stories from around the world since 2004, and we have a treasure trove of amazing audio. Each episode is bound to have something to fit every listener's individual taste. Personal stories, essays, sound art, mystery stories that twist and turn, and other audio experiments. So stop searching. Subscribe to ReSound today and treat yourself to the finest stories ever told in sound. Your ears will thank us.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
So the next knob is interview, and this, I hope it's clear by now that this machine is sort of open to any questions. So if you have a story, you sit down by it, and you have a question, how should I do this? And then you sort of make your own questions and answers using it. So it's just sort of to enhance attention to this. And I find it very useful when it comes to interviewing, because we have to make a lot of choices when we interview. From the genre, will it be investigative, to the totally personal inside the head kind of thing, with lots of pictures or more general information, etc. Will it be confronting, and so on. Most of the interviews I do are more sort of the personal stories and somehow sort of getting close to people, but sometimes I need to take a step back, so it's also sort of where are we comfortable and maybe challenge ourselves and not do what we always do, but what's best for this story. Looking at this interview knob is also good if we do these personal stories where we need to create a space where we can have trust and some kind of sort of contract between us, so that people feel that they're in good hands and relax and talk. So some kind of attention to this before we go out. It really helps you, you know. And you can also decide that certain parts of interviews with a character can be done like with a very sort of close-up technique, while others can maybe be more general or confronting. And with different microphone distances and techniques, so that even if we just have one character in a piece, we have different dynamics for that person, maybe showing different sides of that person or whatever. I didn't used to think about this either when I started, and sometimes I was in situations where I wanted to get really close to people, but I hadn't communicated to them, and I wasn't really aware of it, and sometimes it made people insecure, and they sort of backed away, and I've found out, like, in the last years, that if I'm clear about this, if I say it, they might say no, but if they say yes, then we have a much better premise to work from. So we can also use it within the interview, the genre itself. And there was an American radio maker that moved to Denmark in the 60s. He was a radio feature maker. He passed away last year. His name was Steven Schwartz, and he developed some techniques. And one of them is something he called the moment interview. It's kind of an interviewing technique where you get completely close to a moment that's happened in the past. He often spoke about that, how we, as humans, we sort of develop parts of our history. So it's sort of like the party version of our life. It's sort of, yeah, I'm this kind of person and this is my life. And he wanted to get past these sort of developed stories that we have. And I was so lucky that I learned it from him. And once he sent me to do an exercise interviewing a woman. She was a female politician. Our first meeting was, she just talked about politics and dates and the names, and I was completely confused. But from this, she sort of talked about a period in her life where she'd been running an orphanage. The next time we came back, I saw her, she talked a bit more about it, and then after a while I decided on a moment in these years of her work there that I wanted to go into. So I sat next to her, like side by side, and I just said, I'm going to, you know, just close my eyes, don't think about me, I'm sitting next to you, and we're outside the orphanage. I open the door, I say the first sentence, first person, present tense, and I ask her to repeat the sentence and continue this walk into the orphanage in her memory. So she says, I open the door, I walk in. Maybe I say, back out, no, stand in front of the door. What do you do with your hand? Yeah, I put my hand on the doorknob. So it's like close up. What do you see around you? I see the yard, it's the full moon is shining, there's the trees, so we have a wide shot, you know. So we're using this interviewing technique in this sort of same cinematic way that we can use microphone or sound sort of to create space. And she walked in her memory, sort of into this orphanage, and this woman that had been talking so fast, you know, we sat there and it was a completely different voice and pace. And she walked up to the room where the kids were asleep, and she sat down in her memory, so it became like a memory fantasy, and she just sat by each child and said something to them and sort of caressed their hair. It was very beautiful. So this way we can sort of get past some developed versions of life and maybe reach memories that we can really see it before us. I tried this technique in a course I did with a group of refugee journalists, and the next clip I'll play, it's a young girl. She was interviewed by a classmate about the first time she wore a burqa. And she does it in past tense, but I think it works anyway. And here it is.
It's my first time that I have to use burqa. My mother gave me an old burqa and she tried to put it on me. It was a long dress which covered me completely. On the top there was like a hat and a hole in front of my eyes as if I was in a jail. I couldn't see anything well and I suddenly took it off and told my mom that I'm not going anywhere. She told me, try it again and you'll get used to it. I got the burqa on again. It was a sunny, hot day in Kabul. I stepped out of the door and I almost fell down on the street. Suddenly I couldn't breathe. There was not enough space in front of me to breathe. I couldn't see anything. I just heard people around me. People are passing me by. I was pushed by people and I was just standing on my place.
So I think she could have presented this as an anecdote in an interview. Yeah, I remember the first time I wore a burqa and I almost fell. But here I'm with her, you know. So we can get rid of some of the distance that language creates with this technique and also make people slow down. A lot of people refuse it, I've tried that, but sometimes it works. Some people talk like this naturally and are very sort of connected to memories, and it can be a good way to access people in a different way. Stephen Swartz used to put people on the floor and turn off the light, you know, so they sort of light on, you know. Not everybody wants to do that, but... So the next knob is the narration. I prefer in features or in any kind of program, really, except where you want an objective narrator. I prefer storytellers, the voices, people that the narrator. I prefer it when they sort of stay inside the universe of the story, and that they're not someone sort of that's completely outside looking down on this piece, which I find often happens if we record a narration later in a studio and do it sort of in this newsy way. It really doesn't work in features, I think. It doesn't mean that it has to be a sensitive narrator, but just someone who's connected to the story somehow, the universe of the story. And years ago, I made a feature with two others from a summer camp in Denmark, and we were like portraying kids, and we were sort of trying to do this from the point of view of the kids all the time, so that it was their universe we wanted. We needed a narrator, but we didn't want to use an adult, you know. So there was this boy who was sort of very good with words, and I took him to our camper van, which was, we were there 2 weeks recording, and it sank in the sand. It was on a beach, and it sort of sank deeper and deeper into the sand. It was really warm in there. And we sat there, me and him, and I asked him, sort of using a bit of this Stephen Swartz technique, to close his eyes, and I said, you're floating on a cloud now above the summer camp. You know everything that happens here, you know. You are God. You can look through the doors. You can look into the brains of all your friends, you know everything. And then I said, look down there, there's three little boys and there's two big boys coming. What's happening? What happens in this situation? And he would sort of just start talking, and we covered these different themes and concrete scenes in this camp, and we edited it later, and he became the narrator, and it really worked well. And I thought, you know, I've tried to use it several times since, that you, if there's somebody in the story that can do the narration, maybe instead of you, in a more close to the universe of the story way, then I think that's worth a try. There's a lot of habit, I think, when it comes to narrating in radio. And I like these surprises sometimes. And a radio show that really inspires me when it comes to this defying habit is Love in Radio. which you probably heard, all of you, and it's this sort of creative mischief and sort of solutions that stay inside the universe and the style of interviewing or music or even narration. And one of my favorite stories is The Wisdom of Jay Thunderbolt. And I really admire the way that the authors find solutions that keep everything close to this raw universe that the story has. So it's like the solutions are born out of the energy of the story. So here are two little examples. We arrive at Jay Thunderbolt's house, and the author needs a description of the place.
I laid in the alley for an hour before finally this black lady in the second floor apartment said, I think there's something wrong.
So, Noah.
Yeah.
Can you describe what Thunderbolt's house looked like after we arrived?
It's got like this 70s furniture that's really well worn. The carpet's all kind of matted down.
Yeah, so the author really does everything, I think, in this story to avoid traditional narration. In this excerpt, it could have been him just in a studio saying it looked like this and this, but instead it's as a phone call. It has sort of the same tone and texture and nowness of the rest of the story. Here's a second example.
What do you do for a woman, Noah?
Nursing.
Mom and Dad must be happy that you don't have to be on their Blue Cross guard anymore.
Right, exactly.
I have a different Blue Cross card.
What's yours look like?
Not like that.
Hey, this is Nick again. You know, I hate interrupting like this, but what's not actually clear from the tape is that at this stage, Jay is taking out a gun and is now pointing it about 2 inches from my face. Here it is again.
I have a different Blue Cross card.
What's yours look like?
Not like that.
So what is that?
38.
It's a 38.
Except it's got P loads in it.
So I think these solutions, both they don't rip me out of the universe. Sometimes it's fine to have a narrator that's distance, you know, that has the distance that gives me, as a listener, the space to sort of make conclusions if that's needed in some investigative pieces, etc. In news, of course, we don't want a really sentimental news reader. We want that distance, but with these kind of stories, it works very well. It adds so much to the feeling of the story, these solutions, you know. A few years ago, I was doing a project with three others. We were traveling around Iceland, portraying deserted farms. And we were speaking four different languages, and we had to produce these pieces for the Icelandic radio. So we had this translation problem and narration problem, and in the next excerpt I'm going to play, I'm with another girl. We're in this farm we just entered. It's an old turf house, and we've entered through the back, and it's full of things. It's been left 50, 60 years ago, and it's just somebody who just left and left everything. And we're trying to sort of fantasize about who lived there, who were they, what happened, And so the narrator in the piece, he's actually my husband, he found this idea that he would be a singing narrator, translator narrator. So that's, you should have, I think, page 3 now. Heimkomma.
Eller så är det en ensam pappa med två barn. För spåren av mamman finns inte riktigt där.
Tvær konur. En dansk, en sænsk og evigbil.
For det var kun en ene seng.
Ja, præcis.
Kretilla dukka skåper med snirtive.
Jeg tænkte slet ikke på teenagepiger, der var derinde. Men nu når du siger det.
Islandske faunen og bedda potter og elda.
Det var ingen frigjord kvinna som bodde här, om det bodde någon kvinna här.
Vallur buxur i brotten, hitler med vinflaskor.
Men så fick jag också en fösa för att där ligger alla de där flaskor.
Konutnar spinn upp sögu það sem þær sjá.
Och där uppe var en barnsäng, var det?
rekfeldur ekki maður gjafast að dótti.
Det är lätt att tänka sig att det skulle vara våldsamt där på något sätt.
Dag något gerist eitthvað aldrig varit.
Alltså, tänker man sig måda vara en tragedi.
Bærin är yfirgefin eins och han är.
Med alla flaskorna och...
Våldsomt eller enorm resignation, du vet. Mm. Fullständig uppgivet håp i en mörk vinternatt. Har de pakket det allermest nødvendige?
Ja, oh, bare draget.
Og gået ud over heden. Sne.
Kolla, vi kan røde spindel.
Yeah, so I think he ended up making like 30 songs. I think we made 3 one-hour pieces for the radio drama department in Iceland. And we really thought about these places as a stage, you know, and it was a lot of fun doing this, and he made songs about all kinds of things, you know. So I've been talking a lot about space and layers and verticality, etc., in this presentation when we record, but a lot of it also happens in the editing, of course. And I really love this part of the job because it's like where we can put these layers together, and it often surprises me what happens, like how one and one becomes more than two. And there's just so much more we can do if we have a vibrant and dynamic material that's close to the core of the story, or the universe of the story, or the sound world of the story, or the emotional world of the story. And when I use this, when I teach workshops, I use it in two parts, you know, first for collecting and then for editing. And I like to ask people in the course to sort of put it in their head, sort of make a little room for it somewhere, and turn the knobs during the process. Ask again and again, even, you know, every time you record a new scene, you know, how should the knobs be here, you know, or a new interview. So it's not enough just doing it in the beginning of the process. It's a continuous thing. And one sort of effect in editing that I really love is double exposure, triple exposure, or layers of situations that happen, and sound and words together that create these vertical spatial sensation, and it can create suspense and subtext, etc., etc. There's also this temporal effect, how we experience time differently. And there was a piece in Pre-Europa that I heard there too, the winner, the program that won the competition. It's called Woman Found Dead by Lakeshore by Hugo Lavet. It's a man that's been accused of killing his wife. And they live in a forest in Sweden, and she's gone missing, and they've been looking for her. And he comes back to the house. It's dark. There's spaghetti on the stove that he was cooking before all this happened. The TV is on. And he's just been charged with this murder. And he sits down in the living room, and the narrator describes just the spaghetti on the cooker, the TV, where there's somebody running like 100 meters without sound, and then this man sitting in the dark, and it's sort of described from his perspective, but also from outside of the window. And it becomes like sort of a temporal, emotional space, you know. We know how we feel when we're in shock. It's sort of a shock space that he creates there. Time is stretched. It's very efficient. So 15 minutes left. I want to play one more clip. Is that okay? Yeah? So in the beginning of this session, I played the beginning of this feature I made in Greenland last year, Woman on the Ice. And I used double exposure a lot in this piece because it is about her travel and me that follows 80 years apart somehow. In the next excerpt I'll play, I just found this woman's diary in the Arctic Institute in Copenhagen. So in this diary she travels to Greenland, and I travel as well. And I try to sort of illustrate this in the next clip. Dokumenter, fotografier og kort fra Arktis. Jeg finder den.
Ja, der er 2 mapper. Karen Ros, den sygeplejerske, som var i Amasalik i 1932.
Men der er et problem.
Det er en kopi af afskrift af dagbogen.
Det er bare en kopi af en maskinskrevet afskrift af dagbogen. Og mere end det. Karen nåede kun at være i Grønland i 9 måneder. Men den her dagbog, mangler tiden fra januar til april, da hun forsvandt. De sidste sider er skåret ud. Resten af dagbogen findes muligvis i den lille by, Karen ankom til i 1932. Kolonien Amasalik hed byen dengang. Nu hedder den Dasilak. Den 29.7. skriver han. Jeg skal videre med helikopter til Dasila. Ja, jeg har... Tågeregn bølger. I sådan et kedeligt råt, surt, modbydeligt koldt vejr holder vi vores indtog i Amasalik. Så skal vi ombord i helikopteren. Turen modtog os ikke på en pæn måde, hvad befolkningen derimod gjorde. Allerede langt væk fra kolonien pilede nogle kajakmænd os i møde. I skulle se dem fare afsted, vippe på bølgerne, ind imellem isflager. Vi fik fortøjet, og koloniens herre kom ombord. Og vi var nede i salonen og drikke et lille velkomstbæger. Den her vej, den er lidt ligesom, den fortsætter ud i fjorden. Bjergene spejler sig i isflagerne, så det bliver sådan et puslespilsspejlbillede. So I try to create sort of two times at the same time, you know, her 80 years ago and me now, and it sort of continues through the story. So this radio verticalizator is it a visualization of an idea, and it's sort of an invitation to think through these possibilities of a story, really, all the time. And I think my experience from all these missed opportunities and mistakes that are sort of in my past and that I keep doing, you know, and also as a teacher and a coach, is that we really need to ask and remind ourselves this every time we make a story, and all the time during a story. It's like with life, you know, it can be really uneventful and depressing if everything is on the same sort of frequency, and if there's no space and no dynamics. It's the same with radio. So I just hope this can inspire you and that you'll dive into space. Thank you.
Yes. Do you have other examples of perhaps other mediums that do this kind of work?
I can't hear you. Maybe stand up.
I'm wondering. You gave us some examples from radio, but you said you also have inspirations from literature, from photography.
Yes.
Who are the other artists that are doing work in this imaginative way?
Do you mean like in these other art forms?
Yeah, who's inspiring for you?
Well, I mean, I think it's more like the techniques, so it can be cinematic techniques, or it, like photography uses double exposure. Literature has a lot of techniques, like temporal techniques, or how we describe details, using details, developing character, etc., etc. So all these different art forms, they have a lot of technique that we can sort of pour into radio, painting, whatever. Yeah. So it's not that much specific artists. Of course, sometimes specific ones inspire me, but I can't think of any right now. But it's more general. Yeah.
Well,
You're all hungover. Tired. Yes.
I produce stories as an independent for Wisconsin Public Radio, and it makes me want to, you know, get more into the sounds and that sort of thing. But I also make oral histories for families. Mm. So when you talked about the technique of getting people to be in the scene,
mm.
you know, I'm going to try to use more of that
yes.
in my getting people's life story just for their families, not for the radio, but for their families.
Yeah.
And the other thing that interests me about what you're doing is I spent 30 years before this as a visual artist selling my work around the country at art fairs. And I've always wanted to do, I actually did do a 13-foot tall piece called Worship at the Altar of TV that incorporated five TV sets. This didn't have to do with art fairs. This was an installation piece. But do you know people who are working with sound and visual arts and making installation pieces?
Yeah.
Can
lots
you
of people.
The question?
So it's if I know people that work with installation art and sound, yeah. Yes, I know people that do that. Of their work?
Yeah.
Oh, it's different things, you know. It's I mean, there's a lot of different approaches to this to sound installations. You mean?
Sound and the visual component.
Yeah. I'm not sure how to answer your question. It's sort of.
I'm wondering if there's a structure when they're using sound with visual art. If there's like a visual structure,
yeah.
Or if it's a video and sound, or.
I mean, there's so many ways to do this, and people work a lot with audio walks and all these things where you go out and what happens around you becomes part of the story, and there's in galleries and multimedia things, so there's a lot of ways for that, combining picture and sound, yeah.
I know you said you can't talk about all of the knobs, which
uh-huh.
I understand, there's a lot going
of course,
on in this beautiful
yes.
picture, but can you explain just a little bit of this sort of, when you turn music from one side to the next,
yeah.
What's on this side?
It will usually
side?
Be to find music, for instance, that's in the universe. Sort of if you can sort of create music close to the universe of the piece. But it can also be, you know, if you want to use it emotionally or illustratively or ironically, etc. There are different sort of distances you can use music for sentimentally.
I see.
That's
so,
my thing.
And would sound be the same?
Sound is I suppose, the first question would be, will I use sound, you know? And if I want sound to be a part of storytelling, then turn it over there, and then the next question would be, what kind of sound am I after? If I want to create some kind of a very realistic soundscape, then I should go for those sounds. If I want a more emotional or a poetic soundscape or a raw soundscape or an absurd soundscape, it's sort of, you know, I often look for sounds when I go out that sort of can cross between sort of the real sound world of the place and sort of can gain some kind of emotional or poetic or some kind of other quality.
Okay. So so it's just sort of a figurative distance.
Yeah. But I mean, today this session that was designed 201 that will be online for those who didn't hear it, but there was I had lots of new ideas of how this knob could be applied because there was sort of ways of staging and using filters, etc. with sound. So I'm not that sort of, I've thought mostly about the other three knobs, I have to be honest, yes. Yeah. Yes?
You talked about the length of the Greenlandic words, but uh-huh. I also noticed in the pieces that you played there was so much spaciousness. And
yeah.
coming from a mostly newsy American public radio style, it's
yeah.
like incredibly spacious, this feeling. So I'm just curious about what the outlets were for these pieces and how many constraints are put on you when
yeah.
you're making
none. No, this The Woman on the Ice I produced for a Danish podcast called Third Ear, and they just publish like whenever they have a story and
uh-huh.
they
and whatever it, length it
yeah
takes.
What's best for the story. So that was a lovely privilege to work with that sort of with these conditions. I like that. Yeah.
And what about the piece, the other piece?
The piece from Greenland?
Uh-huh.
I mean, that was part of a course, so that was as well, just as long as it had to be.
I'm just wondering, is there a market, like, on the actual radio for pieces like that? Is there an audience for it?
Yeah.
And is it more in the radio drama?
It's in the radio feature department in different countries that do this a lot.
It's just so different.
I think it's quite a Nordic style, somebody told me, you know, that it's not as snappy.
It's beautiful.
Thank you. Yeah. Yes?
What are the most interesting or most popular Danish radio programs right now?
I think it's 30 actually. The Danish public radio, they don't really have an outlet for this kind of radio anymore. So it's outside of radio more. And I also produce for Norwegian radio and Swedish radio, and they use this. They have departments that support this kind of more artful approach, maybe more than the Danish radio does. So. Mm. Yes.
Do you have any suggestions for how we can encourage media outlets to carry more creative and more interesting programming? Because it sounds like the problem with rigidity in public media is not just unique to the United States.
Yeah. I mean, I think just by doing it, maybe. By turning the knobs yourself. And because I think you often get positive responses from doing that. And of course, what's sort of proper or within each genre, if you do hard news, you know, you can't turn it completely closed, but just have more pictures and more surprise and more maybe less habit or, yeah.
You found that as you turn the knobs, people respond well to it in that.
Yeah.
It allows the establishment.
I mean, we want to reach people. We want people to identify. We want people to connect. And radio really does this, and there's a lot of things that we hear in radio that disconnects, you know, information and sort of unconnected voices, disconnected voices. And I think if there's any chance for you when you produce something where you can make more of a connection with some kind of connection, then that's sort of the purpose of this. And so we can sort of brainwash these rigid media institutions by doing it, maybe. I don't have other answers. I'm hungover too. Yes.
So I'm working in multimedia in Pittsburgh, and I don't have a question. I just want to say I'm going to hang this at my desk and use it as a reminder for every show I'm working in our platform. I think it'll be very helpful. Yeah. Thank you.
I'd look forward to hear how maybe in a year or something if it's changed something or yeah.
Yeah. Thank you.
I'm going to color mine in.
I didn't hear that.
I'm going to color mine.
Yeah.
Just go over one more time, like an interview, what's close and what's distant.
Do you mean in this interviewing technique?
Yeah.
Yeah. So a more distant genre could, of course, be like an investigative reporting kind of where you need to have. You need to have the space to be able to confront people, and you're very clear in your position as an author. I'm here to reveal something or make these uncomfortable questions. So there has to be some distance for you to, like in boxing, you know. If you're up here, it's not no good. But if you're doing other kind of narratives where maybe the closeness is important, you know, then a close biographical interview or just some kind of connection with the interviewee. This can be done in many ways, you know.
Is it a bit about sort of how present you are, like within the...
It's a bit about the contract, I think, between the interviewer and the interviewee. So just to be clear about it, I'm here to investigate you. So I step back and this is what you can expect, but if I want to make a very personal story with somebody, then I will say, you know, I'm going to sit really, I really sit close to people when I interview them. It's like I touch with my shoulder against theirs when I do this moment interviewing.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns. Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Technique and I sort of try to let them know that I'm not afraid of anything that comes. And if something comes that is uncomfortable for them, it's okay. And they can say, I don't want this on air. So it has to be like a safe place or a safe room with some sort of respect so they don't feel abused or, yeah. And then there's lots of things in between that. I mean, you have interrogation as well which can be interesting for some programs as well. Mm. Yes. Am I off the hook?
Thanks for downloading the Third Coast Pocket Conference. We'll be back soon with more sessions, but until then, you can always check out our archive of conference audio at thirdcoastfestival.org or have a listen to our other podcast, Resound, for the best audio stories from around the world. Okay, speak soon. Bye.